Hello, you're very welcome to episode 44 of Consistently Above Average. Andrew McGahan checking in with you for the very last time as a 32-year-old, as this day next week, Halloween, in fact, I turn 33 years old. A great number, especially for all of you Freemason enthusiasts out there. That's the number you really want deep down. The 33rd degree of Freemasonry, of course, the highest you can achieve within their stellar, excellent, transparent and upstanding communities. You're very welcome. Very interesting week. Some good responses and feedback from last week's episode as well, which are greatly appreciated. But I have to say, I was just making sure that this was still recording, as I've been doing a little bit of a reel. The making of the podcast reel today, we are still recording, I can confirm. I've been a lot happier leading up to this tournament, I have to say. Part of the reason is a change to 73.5 kilo. Now, I did the Pan Ams at 73.5 kilo. Initially thought I was going to do 67.5 for Europeans. Made it last year. Didn't make it well. Didn't make it smart. Didn't make it disciplined. But last week, I was able to eat one of the best pizzas of my life, last Saturday evening. It was a New Haven-style pizza, popularized by the notoriously famous pizza reviewer and owner of Barstool Sports, Dave Portnoy. He has, over the years, claimed that New Haven is the pizza capital of the world. And it's definitely worth watching his New Haven pizza reviews. But while New Haven is over in America, if you head up to a place called Flout, F-L-O-U-T, Flout, in Belfast on a Friday or Saturday evening and pre-order, usually a week in advance, to be honest, through a link on their Instagram, you can get a New Haven-style pizza as well. New Haven, pepperoni, hot honey on top. This, words do not do this justice. The sound of the crunch, the sound of the crisp, as he was cutting it in all different errant directions. It's not a very circular pizza. It's not meant to be. This was unbelievable. This was beautifully charred, beautiful undercarriage. All of those terms that Dave Portnoy has coined, that fake reviewers who are just doing this sort of stuff now. Man, great undercarriage on this thing. Can you hear that crisp? Like, they're just stealing Dave Portnoy's stuff. That's okay. Fair enough. But he's the original. He's the guy. This thing was unbelievable. I didn't think it was finishable. It was finishable. So light, so fluffy, so airy, beautifully tangy sauce, lovely pepperoni. Like, I'm sorry for anyone who is on a cut at the moment or is wanting to make weight for the division next week, as I'm waxing lyrical about this insanely good pizza. And I'll be going for another one after the Europeans, I can tell you that much. I am currently sitting underweight at the moment for 73.5 kg. That's what allowed me to have one. I will keep an eye on my weight as I'm considering jumping straight into the gi under 70 very soon after the Europeans. So we will see. And while I don't think my time is fully finished at 67.5 kilograms, the featherweight division, being 6'2", 6'2", and lean and jacked, chisel jaw and a Chad, it's not the best weight class to be competing at consistently with those attributes I've previously mentioned. 67.5, especially with immediately before competing type weigh-ins that you have to do for IBJJF tournaments, it just may not be the move longer term as we now progress, as we hurtle downhill towards mid-30 status after next week. So with that in mind, very much looking forward to the Europeans next week though. Very much looking forward to going back to the beautiful coastal town of Ostia. Back to the pizza place across the road from Golden Italy that serve €1 souply croquettes. That previously mentioned people on this podcast who will now remain unnamed almost got into fights with the staff of this particular restaurant, because these two lads were on a mad one. These two lads probably wanted to call in sick to work and just go out in the rip all weekend. I think they decided, let's just go on the rip and go into work anyway. This is the hidden spot in Ostia. I will reveal it on the story. They are mental. Your man was still working there in April when we were back for the IBJJF Rome Open. But fingers, knees and toes crossed that these two lads are back. One of them looks like Landry from Friday Night Lights. And he's a legend. He's an absolute mad. I was going to say B-A-S-T-A-R-D, but I'm actively trying not to swear more on this podcast. So next week, there are nine of my friends and training partners competing in Rome between Newry and Dundalk gyms. I think this might be the most that have committed to this tournament. Definitely over the course of a week, maybe had more to gi Europeans at one point in time, but that's including other gyms as well. So I think like between just where I would train and teach, I am really, really excited about this for their perspectives as well as my perspectives. I have told them in person, but I will tell them now again digitally and also for everybody else to hear. I'm very excited for a lot of them to get the opportunity for the first or second time to compete at such a huge tournament and to take experience from it. Now, four of the blue belts who are competing are under the age of 22, but have not just taken a notion in the last 2 months to say like, oh yeah, we're going to do the Europeans. This is like a gradual effort of intent that, yeah, okay, we're going to do the Europeans because the competition results and how we've done and trained over the last 18 to 24 months have been very good domestically for them, progressively better domestically as well, which is really important, building momentum, building confidence and stuff like that. And as well as like international, whether it's like UK or further afield results in regular tournaments or IBJJF International Opens. I think this is a good time, age and whatever wise, for them to gauge their progress. And I do think, yeah, a world exists. A world definitely exists where we could be back in this podcast saying they all went 0-4. They were all unlucky. The ref was shite. Made a big mistake, critical error, blah, blah, blah. Couldn't get going. Wake up was wrong. Or just as easily, we could be talking about what medals. I was about to say weddles. No idea why. Medals. We're talking either bronze, silver, gold, maybe even an absolute run as well from one or two of them. Depending on the weight category, we could also be talking about the reality that, like, for example, if I use something I'm going to reference here later on in the show, this is an audible. I'm going to go to registrations, Europeans. I'm going to pick the division. I'm getting a phone call here. I'm going to answer it on the air. You are live on the Consistently Above Average podcast. Please do not reveal your name. Can you hear me? You can say yes or no. Can you hear me? What are you doing?
I am currently...
Are you going to vote?
Well, I'm considering it.
Jim Gavin, number one.
Well, I don't know. I had this conversation with someone earlier and...
This is going to go out on the episode, just so we're clear. No. It genuinely is, right? Okay, I'll ring you when I'm done, all right? I'll ring you when I'm done. Bye. Okay, sorry about that. I'm going to go to blue belt lightweight, for example. Blue belt adult lightweight. And two Atos guys with a rating of 1,761 tops the division. One of the Grillo brothers, the two Grillos, okay? Like, really good, really, really good blue belt competitors are going to be 1 and 2. The average rating of the division is 1,414. A lot of that is provisionally rated. This is all using Dan Lukehart's IBJ and Mr. Weiss, his co-owner of the website, IBJJFrankings.com. And now I am looking at feather. There is 77 people in the featherweight division, and a lot of them have provisional ratings due to not competing in a lot of tournaments yet. A lot of them have 1,400. standard ratings, which is what you get with a lot of these international majors from blue belts. But it also means that there are people in there that are absolute sleepers who are going to do really well. And then you have somebody at the top end of it, like Carlos Ryan Oliveira Silva, who is from GNS Academy in Brazil with a rating of 1,487. So we'll chat about that system a little bit later on. But my reason for that little audible, and I'm sorry about that phone call that came in as well, is that the reality of these blue belt divisions is that there are going to be some absolute sleepers who are going to go on runs that nobody has heard of beforehand and could very well double golding. Last year's blue belt double gold winner is a guy called Callan O'Mahony, who's American, I believe, with an Irish passport, or half American, half Irish, had spent a bit of time in Cork. Not that I want to dox him fully, but I do believe that there was a bit of ire previously on the Shoyerol confession tapes. If you know what they are, on the Shoyerol confession tapes on Instagram, where you ring a number and leave a voicemail in and they'll post it if they like it. He talked about how there was no good wrestling in Ireland, and it was because he had won a tournament by wrestling. Well, his wrestling is quite good, and he ended up winning double gold at blue belt last year at the Europeans. Did a lot of training in BJJ Cork and down in Cork and stuff like that. So I think with Galera as well. So he's in a purple belt this year as well, which would be very exciting. I assume he's in a purple belt, actually. I hope he's in a purple belt. So that'll be cool to watch. But what I'm saying is there's sleepers out there that are going to come out of nowhere. Some of the brackets have like 70 plus competitors, which mean it's going to turn into a bracket of 128 people. If you don't get the bye, you could be talking about seven matches for gold in one day. This is a serious thing. This is very likely. I think it is quite likely that someone is going to have to win six or seven matches for gold in these divisions. There's a good chance that the ranking system will be upset. Blue belt is the kind of one where you see, at least for the Nogi side of things, Nogi is so underpopulated competition numbers-wise compared to the Gi and IBJJF that you do have people who are like provisionally rated or barely rated who are going to come out and win this whole thing. So I think that something like that, the amount of matches is so important. Like, it's such a hard task. Like, if there is a guy that has to win, guy or girl that has to win six, seven matches to be able to win a major medal, that is so hard earned. The most I've ever had in a day was four. Luckily, I've had that experience both in Ireland and at the Europeans. Now, while I am frustrated at the moment in my own current ability and my performances over the last 12 months, despite like maybe going 1-1, 1-1, 0-1, 1-1, 1-1, all of this sort of stuff, hitting submissions that I would regularly get in the gym, I know that having had that previous experience of going back to the bullpen for 20, 30 minutes, sometimes longer, in between matches, at a major tournament is something that I am aware of. Aware of the ups and downs, trying to warm up again, trying to refocus, trying to stay calm, knowing what you need to be thinking of in between matches. From a coaching perspective, I'm really glad to have experienced that. At least from my own perspective, that was at brown belt, not at black belt. Hopefully one day at black belt, we'll understand that as well. But like, I saw it happen last year to somebody in particular. I saw it happen to both of them, to be honest, that they won really convincingly first match or first two matches, and then it came to the second or the third match, and then there was a big break in between, and that's just when the focus can drop a little bit. So being aware of when it's ready to get going again is a huge thing if you're making through these brackets. And I am really, really, really looking forward to Nogi Europeans. We're not going to go into it in the way that maybe we did this time last year, how we talked about it. To be honest, I don't even know if I'm going to bring the gear and the equipment with me over to Rome in terms of an episode. So we'll see. But there is a more of a general broad topic that I want to branch off into. I think I might be having an aneurysm tonight, to be honest. And I think this might appeal to the casual trainer a little bit more. The person who may have no interest in competing, an active, recreational, regular enjoyer of jiu-jitsu who maybe listens to this podcast and has fallen off the wagon just a little bit in the last while, maybe on the fence about coming back after a hiatus. We had a very, very, very good return last week, an impromptu return, and it made me so happy A lot of the higher belts who would have trained with this person on their way up, so happy, brilliant to see them, had not been on the mats training since COVID, literally since COVID, between caring for relatives, moving houses, starting and welcoming children into a family. This person has had reasons not to be back at jiu-jitsu. Jiu-jitsu was not the number one priority in their world. The world outside, I don't want to say had gotten in the way, because they've done brilliant things and created a family and stuff like that since then. But I drove past them last week, pushing the pram, give a very enthusiastic beep, big open hand wave. You know the type. I'm doing it here in the studio. And I know it had been in their head about wanting to come back. Got a text later on saying, I'll be back tomorrow. I'll be back Friday. Then the best part of it, they followed through. They came back on Friday. They've been back since, trained once this week on Wednesday. Have to try and find which class is optimal to get around work and bedtimes and stuff like that. I, honest to God, could not be happier. This is a PSA. This is the public service announcement. This is how you do it. And coaches up and down the country will tell you, and I hope will agree with me, they are always delighted to see people who fell off a little bit for whatever reason, come back in. They got to a certain point in the sport, for whatever reason, life got in the way. Maybe they stopped enjoying it. Maybe they had a bit of an injury, bit of a setback, commitments in the way, everything that can happen. Coaches and people that run classes love seeing these people come back in the door. While they like to see the regular people get ahead, do well, be committed, they like to see new people start. We hold a special place in our heart for the ones that got away, the ones that walk back through your door. And this person is, what I'm trying to say is the best way to do it. It literally is, oh yeah, I'm going to come back on Friday. Oh, they're back on Friday. Okay. Now, while I know people have good intentions or are well-intentioned and maybe wanting to come back, really, at the minute in their life, they may have no clear intention on following through with that. Maybe I have never bumped into anyone in Tesco like this, so I'm just going to use it as an example. Maybe you've bumped into them in Tesco. Maybe you've bumped into them waiting for a coffee. Maybe you've bumped into them at the recycling centre, the bottle bank, the bottle return scheme in your local supermarket. Maybe out for a walk. Anything. Maybe in an airport. It could be anything. Anything and everything. And the conversation starts. Must get back at the Jets. Must get back training. Are you still coaching? Are you still at the coaching? Are you still competing? Are you still traveling? Are you still in the same spot? Have you moved gym yet? What times are the classes on at again? Message. Well, what time's the class on at? Timetable's there. Schedule's still on the website. Everything's still there. I understand it must be nervous. Like, or, geez, I must get back at it. I better get fit before I get back at it. I'm going to get fit. I'm going to drop a bit of weight, then I'll get back at it. I have a Hydrox event, and I'll be back after that. Me and my mate, we're doing a Hydrox doubles, and we're going to get back after that. Was thinking about doing a bit of MMA instead. You name it. Coaches up and down the country have heard it. They have heard it, and there's probably more salacious things that they've heard as well that are not fit for broadcast. Now, not to doubt that person's intention, even though 2 minutes ago I just did on the air. I said they have no clear intention of following through with it. They may have a semblance of intention of following through with it. However, this is the spoiler. This is the big reveal. Just come back. Just do it. One message is fine. Follow through with it. Do not be the tire kicker. Do not be the tire kicker. Unannounced even, that's even better. Just follow through with it. Unannounce it to yourself. Say you're going to do it to yourself. Follow through, do it. Perfect. That's the way to be. That's genuinely the way to be. And there are so many reasons that can block a person. From chatting to people who've come back, there are so many reasons that can block a person. Don't just do it for one session. If you're going to do it to yourself, set yourself whatever you think is manageable at the beginning. There are people who maybe have stopped and at a previous time when they started and got really into it, they may have had less responsibilities. They could train 4 or 5 times a week. So in their head, they've built up this situation where they don't want to come back and do it again until they have been able to carve out this imaginary free time that doesn't exist anymore, that they would be able to train 4 or 5 times a week again. So they don't want to come back unless they're able to do what they could do before. They're waiting for the perfect time when they can do that again. That perfect time is not coming. Nobody is coming to save you. The absolute reality is that might not be viable for you anymore as an individual, and that's completely fine. That is okay. They might think they're going to be shite when they come back. Oh, I'm going to be shite when I come back. Here's again the spoiler. You probably are. That's completely fine. Nobody cares. Nobody in the gym is sitting thinking, well, actually, sorry, they might be thinking, do you remember your man who used to train or the girl who used to train? Didn't they have a lot of potential? Weren't they great? There's nobody who's still training, who's a higher belt, that's going to think any less of the person who comes back and is finding it hard to get the coordination back. They're not going to be like, that person used to be great, now they're shit. Let's laugh at them. That's not happening. However, that's definitely a scenario that seems quite plausible in your head, and it can be a barrier for you not wanting to come back. They could also be worried that the people who they used to be able to beat or who they used to be able to tap will now be able to tap them. Here's another thing for you. Yes, they're going to be able to. And again, nobody cares. That's fine. It's going to take a while to get back into this situation. It's going to take you a while to get used to it. I did many years ago have a particular rougher, heavier training partner who gave me an awful time through white belt and through blue belt. And the one that got away in my mind is the person who didn't stay training consistently enough to allow me to catch up and overturn that deficit and overturn that barrier. And it'll never happen, and that's fair enough, and it wouldn't bother me. But as a younger person, lighter person, I just always felt that person, probably rightly, has it out for me and used to batter me, and I never got to flip the switch on that. I never got to change that ratio. But if you're that person, like being able to train like once a week for 6 to 8 weeks or even twice a week max, that can help make you enjoy it again. Ease yourself back into it. Don't be annoyed if you think, well, I want to be able to train 5 days a week and I'm going to come back. That is not sustainable. That's not going to happen. I can tell you now that will not work. If your gym has open mats, try and take advantage of these things. Even though it can be a very scary thing to do, to say to somebody, here, I'm only back training. Do you mind if we drill for the next 5 minutes instead of rolling? This is something I've forgotten how to do. Instead of sparring, can I just try and work on that a little bit? You'd be shocked at how accommodating and helpful some of these people are. Do as much or as little as you want at this session. Do what is just enough for you. Don't try and say, let's go and burn the boats. 20 rounds at open mat, please. You're literally only getting back to something that your body is not used to. Like, I've had to start getting a little bit better at this myself. And even now, I had to sit out the last 2 rounds of no-gi this morning because I felt my current breaking point for the day, other sessions on beforehand, other sessions on this evening, I needed to get home and rest and eat something and then be ready to train again tonight. There is a time and a place where those 2 rounds, you can just be like, ah, grand, I can do them. But 1 week before the Europeans, maybe not that time. Now, I am coming at this perspective from a position of arrogance, from a position of luxury, and I'm going to say these two things. I have never taken a largely extended break from training in about 15 years. I have been so lucky. I'm hitting the desk here, touch wood. Injury is the only thing that kept me from full sparring. As soon as I was able to like move around and train again, I was back drilling. But genuinely, in terms of like other stuff on, traveling for events, work, whatever, over the years, it has never been more than a week, maximum 10 days to 2 weeks. And touch wood, that continues, that I have not been able to train or that I didn't want to train, that I was like, I'm not bothered. I don't want to go do jiu-jitsu. I am very lucky that it has always appealed to me in that sort of sense, that I've wanted to do it. Now, that is also due to not taking care of personal responsibilities or professional responsibilities through work or relationships in my 20s. No, I can't do that thing on Friday evening. Sorry, that's when training is on. That, for better or for worse, has been my default internal answer for over 10 years. Coming up to 15 years, I would say, as of right now, that has been for better instead of for worse, considering where I am right now in relation to many things. But it's like, I know there are so many other people like this who have other passions and responsibilities who are insanely content having come back to training if they can only make those two sessions a week. That's all they need. The third one is a bonus. If they get the third, they do. If they get the two, they're set. And that's the thing. A lot of people need to taper and change their expectations about what their relationship will be with jiu-jitsu when they come back after a break. The second position of arrogance and luxury of my statement is, like, rightfully or wrongly, the majority of people that you train with as a higher belt, so I'm using me in this example as a black belt, the majority of people that I will train with on a weekly basis, in their mind, they will probably haven't made up about how the role is going to go. That they haven't had that eureka moment yet where they've hit a sweep, hit a guard pass, hit a submission on you, and then they realize that you're human. So it's a feeling out, conservative process where they're not prepared to go full whack, throw it at you, okay? Fist slap there for, fist punch for ASMR reasons. I hope you can hear that, me punching my fist. That's me saying full whack, throw it on you. One of the best things you can feel as a coach or a higher belt training with lower belts is when somebody has that eureka moment. Somebody gets something and the whole side of their game then changes. They now realize, wait a minute, hold on a second. Nobody told me this fella could bleed. Nobody told me this fella's ankle could go. The reverse armbar was on. The Ezekiel works. Why did nobody tell me this before? Now I'm going to throw it on the see you next Tuesday, the next time I roll with him. I'm going to stick it to him this round. They are going to get it. You are going to get it, kid. Even if from the perspective of they might be tired and you want to try gas them out further, just go for it. Just put it on them. So when you're coming back, you can use this as an advantage to you. You can use this as an advantage. Avoid the person that you used to beat that's now going to smoke you. Just avoid them. Ghost them. Don't train with them. That's fine. Dip them for a couple of weeks if you need to. They're going to get you anyway in the long term. They are going to get you back. I'm sorry about that, but they will get you. They will smoke you. Try and get the rounds with the higher belts. Put yourself in a bad position. Call out the higher belt. Get gassed out again. Remember why you enjoyed it so much in the first place. Like, they used to beat you before. They're going to keep beating you now. So you might as well continue on that sort of streak, if that makes sense. Because within jiu-jitsu, comparison can be the biggest thief of joy. So if you're going to stress yourself out by thinking, how am I going to do against the people I used to beat or be competitive with? You might as well try and get the reality check from the people that you've never beaten to begin with. So you might as well just lose to those people. And that is my public service announcement around the worries of coming back to jiu-jitsu and maybe what I feel is the correct way to try and come back to jiu-jitsu. But as we close it off here, I cannot overstate how much I am looking forward to the Europeans next week, to the time away. A couple of days after I compete will be like probably like assessing the last couple of months that I had planned out in a holiday in August for my training all the way up, my teaching all the way up. Now it'll be thinking of like, how can we change things? What has worked? What hasn't worked? Like being able to like sit and not worry about teaching for a few days and think like, okay, I want to try and change this. I want to try and change that. This is the next couple of topics that we're going to move on to over now in Christmas, moving into January, moving in towards Gi Europeans, one or two people talking about No-Gi Worlds. Okay, what should their training look like? How can I help them? How am I going to be able to train and prepare for No-Gi Worlds? All of these sort of stuff. But also getting to like be in a foreign country, have the €1 espressos, eat the pastries, eat the cannolis, eat the pasta, eat the pizza, getting to watch the other divisions, see who's going, like, will Gianluca go one better this year? Former podcast guest, will he go one better this year? Take the gold, since Rafael Lovato Jr. is not there. Or will somebody else pip him to that gold medal? He could very well do it. Fresh off a big win in Kuwait last week. Let's see. And I'm actually raging now that I'm near the end of this podcast and I've just thought that's the episode that I should have done instead. I'm not sure how much free time I'm going to have between now and Tuesday. Schedule's pretty chock-a-block. I should bring my equipment to Rome, actually, because when I did look through the brackets earlier on, I looked through the names, I looked through the black belt divisions, there are some big names, some big potential matchups, big returns to competition as well. Tommy Lanaker in particular, Langacker, competing in IBJJF for the first time since 2023. He won Worlds last time he did it. He's coming back. Nogi Europeans. There's a lot of good black belts competing. And as always, we mentioned them earlier on, use the excellent IBJJFrankings.com. Follow them on Instagram, IBJJFrankings. Dan Lukehart, you can go back and listen to the wonderful episode with him that is on this podcast feed. His stories are an excellent insight into why this system matters, what sort of narratives, storylines, rivalries are happening at international opens, and hopefully, he does a good deep dive of the Europeans brackets and what could happen in some of those brackets. Maybe a listener or two could message him and say, what do you think about Europeans next week, Dan? Want to have a look? Want to tell us who to look out for? Like, this guy has forgotten more or can re... He is one of the best recalls. That episode is worth going back and listening to. But has really, like, opened my eyes to the coverage of jiu-jitsu and different things that you need to be looking out for. The system as well, just... It is fantastic. Thanks to my inactivity, if you go to IBJJFrankings.com, thanks to my inactivity in the IBJJF Nogi element of Jiu-Jitsu, I am ranked dead last in my division, and rightfully so. Have beaten people in that division before over the course of my competitive career, but they're not logged on the system, which is completely fine. Here's hoping for another couple of mistakes on the draw side of things from the IBJJF, so I'm not paired up with yet another former world champion very early in the bracket. If anything, this sort of system, my poor ranking, my poor rating, is showing me the importance of getting up to speed again as quick as possible, getting better, learning properly, studying properly, trying to improve properly, realize what other people are good at, realize what the meta is in competition, the tactics of competition, and get to as many of these European international opens in the next 12 months. That's the plan we're formulating for the next 12 months, all going to plan. This year was a quieter year in the competitive front. Gi Europeans, Masters Europeans, Rome Open, Pan Ams, Nogi Euros, Nogi Worlds. Hopefully Paris in November, all going to plan. I may have to sell a jumper or a couple more t-shirts to be able to include that. But the plan is for next year, a competition every month, smaller tournaments, build to the bigger tournaments, try get the points, try get the rankings, try get the experience to improve, to resensitize or desensitize myself to the feelings of competition and to give it as best of an effort as I physically can as an athlete on multiple fronts. And whether that means competing at 73.5%, sometimes things can happen that just make you realize, yeah, I shouldn't eat that pizza. I shouldn't eat those chips. I shouldn't eat those goujons. And I think the Pan Ams and subsequent fallout and what's happened since Pan Ams have made me think 2026 is going to be our year. But let's see what happens. Hopefully, I hopefully will be back between now and the Europeans. I really do hope I will. I'm going to do my best to do a little bit of a preview of the black belt divisions. Or maybe I should bring my small recording stuff with me, because I'm there from Tuesday till Sunday. So I'll chat to you when I'm chatting to you. I'm going to try to get some good videos in. Maybe some coverage or content on the podcast page on Instagram, if you can follow it. And we'll see what happens. Before I go, I'm going to Google something for you. Thank you for tuning in and good luck. If you're competing, and hopefully see as many people as possible over there wearing their consistently above average t-shirts, don't forget to pack them. But I'm going to finish off with a little bit of pointless information. Jiu-jitsu wise, you can turn it off now. I mentioned eating the chicken goujon. Goujon is a French word, which I learned recently. And the French, like, I don't attribute the French with chicken goujons, to be honest. The word goujon originates from the French word for a type of freshwater fish, the goujon. G-U-D-G-E-O-N. Goujon. This meaning led to its use in French cuisine for a narrow strip of fish. The French are probably tearing their hair out. Culinary experts, French fine dining, known around the world for their exquisite quality and taste, the narrow strip of fish like sole that are breaded and fried. And now that's been hijacked by people like me with limited eating palates who love chicken goujons. I would say they are raging. Absolutely raging. The word could also be referred to a French sculptor who was called Jean Goujon. What a name. Jean Goujon. Perfect. Oh my God. So it should be used as a concept of a narrow strip of fish fillet, and it has been stolen by sticky fingered jiu-jitsu losers like me that eat chicken goujons. If that is not one of the greatest insults to the French cuisine and nationality that I have ever heard or said on this podcast, I don't know what is. Thanks for tuning in. I'll be back next week or after the Europeans. Chat to you then. Good luck.